Hello, everybody. I'm Parrish Alford.
And I'm Logan Lowry, and this is Double Coverage.
Ole Miss and Mississippi State Talk brought to you by the Daily Journal and DJournal.com. Hello, everyone. This is Parrish Alford with the Daily Journal. I'm joined by Logan Lowry, our Mississippi State writer, and this is Double Coverage. It's our weekly podcast, all things Mississippi State and Ole Miss, and we are in football game week mode. Lots to talk about on the program, much of it disappointing. We'll hit some bright spots, too. Logan, how are you, man?
Doing good, Parrish. Yeah, they followed both of the teams that we cover followed kind of the same script last weekend. Played well in the first half and then just kind of crapped in the bed the second half. And that's kind of the story for both. The only thing is Ole Miss was playing a quality opponent. Mississippi State wasn't.
Well, you know, the result was the same. And as you mentioned, it was a stinky set of circumstances there. And we'll talk about that in just a little bit. Hey, folks, before we move on, we do want to remind you about a couple of other podcasts to search for. Productions of the Daily Journal. Be sure to check out The Memo, our news podcast, all things Northeast Mississippi, coming to you three times a week on Monday, Wednesday, and Thursday with Brad Locke and Derek Russell. And also check out Prep Rally for all your high school sports needs. That's with Gene Phelps, Blake Morgan, and Brad Locke again. That's coming to you every Wednesday. Look for those productions of the Daily Journal. Lots of good stuff there. And Logan and I are with you each Thursday, as a rule. Sometimes schedules dictate otherwise. You might find us on a Friday, but at some point near the end of the week, we're going to be here talking Mississippi State and Ole Miss. Both of these teams had their long-awaited season openers last week. Both of them started off in the loss column. Logan, I'll tell you, and let's just start with State a little bit, the Bulldogs losing 21-20 to South Alabama. And I was surprised last week when you couldn't carry on the discussion with me about Jim Croce and that classic, you don't mess around with Jim, and that line in there about the country boy from South Alabama. And I was poking fun at the Jags on Twitter, man, when they were down 17-0. And then lo and behold, in the second half, here come the Jags. Well, what happened to State after halftime?
Basically, they just took their foot off the gas. I mean, they just came out flat in the second half, thought they had the game won, were way overconfident. The fans, I guess, felt the same way, either that or the heat was getting to them because the stadium was, you know, half empty by halftime. You know, the student section was nearly completely gone. It was just dull in that second half. And South Alabama built a little momentum scoring on the opening drive of the second half. And, kind of just took momentum from there. Mississippi State tried to get it back there late in the game when they realized things were in jeopardy and just couldn't generate that same type of fire that they had in the first half. State, I thought, played well, especially their front seven in that first half. Had 11 tackles for loss in the game. They held South Alabama to just 5 yards rushing in the first half. And South Alabama just really couldn't get anything going. They did get into field goal range twice in the first half and clanked both uprights early on in that ball game, and that would kind of come back to happen again late in that ball game. Mississippi State drove down in with 57 seconds to go and tried to kick a 28-yard game-winning field goal, and Weston Graves clanked it off the left upright as well. So it's just kind of a strange game. You know, it just State secondary looked terrible the entire ball game. Quarterback situation was really weird. You know, Nick Fitzgerald starts off that ball game. You spent so much time in the off season figuring out who's going to be that starting quarterback. And that lasted all of two series. Nick Fitzgerald comes out and goes three and out the first two series that he's out there, misses on three passes. Two of those were dropped and just couldn't get anything going. Damian Williams comes in, lead State on four straight scoring drives, you know, to build that 17-point lead. And then just things kind of started falling apart from him. He just really never posed a vertical passing threat the entire ball game. Now, Dan Mullen said that had a lot to do with South Alabama's defense. They were playing back, so they took what they could underneath. But, you know, from what I've seen from Damian Williams, he's really not a guy that's going to just heave the ball deep downfield anyway. So, you know, he did have some success running the ball. He had 93 yards rushing in that game, but you know, State's offense just didn't look the same in the second half as it did in the first. And you just really, you know, the running game really wasn't that great. You know, the receivers didn't play that well. The offensive line, I thought, was a little better than a year ago. I mentioned how successful the front seven was for Mississippi State, but that secondary was really, really bad for Mississippi State. And that was a concern going in. You know, the two cornerbacks, Cedric Giles and Talando Cleveland, were out. So basically State started off with their second string cornerbacks anyway. And seemed like those guys were just content to let the receivers catch the ball and just make sure that they were right there to make the tackle.
Yeah, I saw a lot of that coverage from Ole Miss against Florida State.
And it was just a weird, strange game. I mean, that was a game that Mississippi State had no business losing. I mean, they were by far the better team out there on the field. But, you know, when you let your foot off the gas and you've got a lot of young players going, and, you know, sometimes it's hard to get that momentum back. And I think that they took things for granted and it come back to bite them right there in the end.
Well, I tell you what, Logan, I was able to watch a lot of that game because Ole Miss did not play until the Monday in Orlando. So I watched a lot of football on Saturday and flew out to Orlando on Sunday. But one of the things I thought of after the State game against South Alabama was that Weston Graves, who had kicked well earlier in the game.
Yeah, kicked a career-long 48-yarder early in the game.
Yeah, I thought he really kind of saved the weekend for the Sun Belt Conference kickers because – you know, Appalachian State did not beat Tennessee because they couldn't kick. And it looked like State was fixing to win on a long field goal. And you could kind of say the same thing for South Alabama, who had so struggled with a couple of field goal attempts earlier in the game. But then lo and behold, Weston Graves hits the upright as well. And you kind of forgot about that because you saw those South Carolina guys, those South Alabama guys running around and celebrating on the field. Huge win for their program. Damian Williams, you know, we've talked so much in the off season about the quarterback competition at State, who it might be. And obviously Dan Mullen was going to play things secretive and close to the vest, and he did that. But I just got the sense that Williams was like the third guy in that race. And then the way it played out, I know that Fitzgerald didn't get anything done on his first two drives, and so he came out quickly, but so quickly that it made me think that Dan Mullen was going to go with Damian Williams early in the game anyway, unless Fitzgerald did something dynamic or outstanding, which he clearly did not do. Do you think that was the case? Was Williams going to go in quickly to begin with, and where does that race stand right now?
That's what he said after the ball game. The plan going in was to have 2-2. So Fitzgerald was going to get the first two series. Williams was going to get the second two, and then they were going to kind of play it by ear based on however they did going forward from that. And you know, based on the first four series, I mean, Williams had led two scoring drives, and Fitzgerald hadn't completed a pass. So they stuck with Williams. Fitzgerald went back in right before halftime to take a knee. And I thought that was really telling, you know, that you're sending your starter back out there to take a knee. I think that was kind of a message that Dan Mullen was sending to Nick Fitzgerald. And also, you know, Dan Mullen said that his plan was to start Fitzgerald in that second half. And South Alabama comes out and scores that first touchdown to start the second half. And, you know, it made it a two-score ball game at that point. So he just decided to stick with the hot hand, which was Williams. And, you know, but like I said, in the second half, Williams didn't exactly set the woods on fire either. So I think that quarterback competition is still open. I asked Dan Mullen earlier this week if Nick Tiano could get into that mix, if that's still an option, you know, and he kind of played it coy. I don't think that he's really in the mix right now at this point. I still think it's just Williams and Fitzgerald. I think Williams will get the start this week, you know, based on what happened last week. I mean, he got the majority of the reps. So I do think you'll see both quarterbacks again this week, but they really need to get this thing settled and get that, you know, starting quarterback dialed in, because you don't want to be rotating quarterbacks throughout the season. You want to try to, you know, with the way the offense is going, with a lot of young receivers, with a running game that really just hasn't done anything in the last year or so, you want to get that quarterback situation settled, get that guy comfortable in this offense so they can start making some plays, because you know, with the way this secondary looks right now, they're going to have to score some points, because that secondary is going to give up some points. So, yeah, I really, like I said, I think Williams will start this week. You'll still see Fitzgerald, and I know they really want to get Tiano on the field at some point just to get his feet wet. But, yeah, it's still wide open. It's as wide open as it was this time a week ago.
Well, shifting gears a little bit, Ole Miss lost 45-34 against Florida State in Orlando, and it was a very it was a game similar in a lot of ways, Logan. I mean, but you know, when you're ahead 28-6, when you're ahead 17-0 against South Alabama, you figure you're going to close the deal. When you're up 28-6 against Florida State, and your offense is just going down the field at will, seemingly, and scoring touchdowns, not kicking field goals, you feel pretty good about how the game's going to finish up for you. Florida State got what you had to have to pull off a comeback like that, and that was a touchdown late in the first half. So, you know, when the game got going after halftime, they weren't looking at a 22-point deficit. They had already shaved a little bit off that. They were 15 points back when they started the third quarter, and, you know, that's just two possessions. One of them has to be a two-point conversion, obviously, but, you know, that's a manageable deficit, and the Seminoles got it to that to go into the locker room at halftime. They come back after that. Frankly, I thought they had better adjustments, because whatever they were doing, and, you know, it wasn't really obvious to the untrained eye here, but they just outplayed Ole Miss in the second half. They made those adjustments on defense. And this is a secondary, Logan, that Chad Kelly ripped apart in the first half that many have ranked as the best secondary in the country when you see these various position group rankings. So that was a very experienced and productive group that Kelly had a great deal of success with in the first half. Now, the Seminoles clearly had the upper hand in the second half. Kelly reverted to some problems that he had early last year in terms of protecting the ball. When you go back and look at Chad Kelly in 2015, 31 touchdown passes, 13 interceptions, more than half of his 13 interceptions came in a three-game stretch. I believe it was Memphis, Auburn, in that area there. But he had seven over a three-game stretch. Then he really kind of grew into the offense, was protecting the ball better, and just didn't turn it over that much down the stretch. I'm thinking that he didn't have a turnover against State. I know he threw an interception in the Sugar Bowl against Oklahoma State, but four turnovers against Florida State to offset the four touchdown passes that he did throw. There were times, like I said, when that passing game was just on fire, Kelly was making really great throws, and the receivers that we've talked about a lot, the talent and depth at that position was showing out. You know, you had Kelly throwing to seven different guys, including the freshman and A.J. Brown, who had a couple of catches, one for a 36-yard gain, and D.K. Metcalf, who had one, but it was for a touchdown. It was a really nice play. It was well covered. He used his size. Kelly threw it up there, and Metcalf kind of tipped it to himself and made the catch in the corner of the end zone, a very savvy play for a true freshman. But after halftime, you know, Kelly has a sack fumble, a couple of interceptions, so that really changed the tone of the game. Florida State came back quickly, ended up scoring 33 straight points before Ole Miss scored again. So they made the adjustments on both sides of the ball, really. They stopped Kelly from marching up and down the field through the air. Ole Miss was no longer effective on the ground. And the redshirt freshman quarterback there, DeAndre Francois, did not turn it over at all. It's not surprising that he would come out and play well, because Florida State does not sign stiffs. So you knew he was a good athlete. His recruiting history told you that. And we knew that he was going up against an Ole Miss secondary that had big concerns to start with, and then lost its best corner early in the game, Kendarius Webster, one of two major injuries, the other being running back Eric Swinney, who are now lost for the season. But that was a big blow to an Ole Miss pass defense that was suspect anyway. The Rebels ended up playing six cornerbacks in the game. There were some missed assignments, guys out of position, but you know, bottom line is they couldn't cover the dink and dump. They couldn't cover the short stuff, the tight end across the middle, that sort of thing. That those guys were just open. That's not just defensive backs. You're talking about linebackers in there as well. But those guys were constantly open, and Florida State made big plays there. Ole Miss got to Francois a good deal of the time, but not all the time. And, you know, when they didn't, he hit open receivers, and the Seminoles moved down the field that way. And there were times, like on the touchdown pass late in the first half, when DeAndre Francois took a lick, man. He took a shot. Yeah, he was slow getting up after that touchdown pass, but he showed no effects of that in the second half. So, you know, that was the Ole Miss-Florida State game. It was ended up being the largest comeback in school history for Florida State. There were some bright spots for Ole Miss, but they were all in the first half. You know, Kelly played well in the first half. He played like the quarterback that he was last year. So the body of work tells you that he can overcome these turnovers. He's done that before. That's what I would expect. But those turnovers cost Ole Miss in a big game on a big stage. I also thought the Rebels ran the ball well in the first half. They're going to need a lot more of Akeem Judd now because that position gets a lot thinner. They already had lost Jordan Wilkins for the season for academic reasons due to an administrative error. Now you throw in Eric Swinney, a redshirt freshman who was going to be a big, big part of their plans, and that running back position gets a little shaky right there. But the Rebels kind of turning their attention to Wofford this week. We'll talk about that a little more in a moment, and we'll talk about the Rebels' plans to replace Webster and Swinney. But, Logan, tell us a little bit about South Carolina and Mississippi State, how you see that matchup. I watched a lot of the Gamecocks against Vanderbilt, and they were not an impressive football team.
Yeah, they're kind of in the same situation. They're playing dual quarterbacks at this point. Obviously, they got a new staff, and Will Muschamp taking over that program. Program wasn't very good a year ago. I think they're a little better this year than they were maybe last year, but you know, still really early in the season. The good advantage that South Carolina does have is they played on a Thursday night, so they're going to have a couple of extra days to prepare for Mississippi State in this ball game. And, you know, like I said, Mississippi State's got a ton of questions that they need to answer still. You know, they didn't get a whole lot of that answered in week one. The bright spots for State in that first game, you know, A.J. Jefferson played an outstanding ball game. Four tackles for loss in that game, a couple of sacks. Really kind of what you expect out of him as a fifth-year senior. Another guy on that defensive side of the ball that played really well was redshirt freshman linebacker Leo Lewis. He led the team with nine tackles, had a couple of tackles for loss, and most of those were open field tackles for him, which was really impressive. You know, he obviously was a highly rated recruit, redshirted a year ago, really lost some weight. He kind of came in a little heavy his first year. He probably dropped 10 to 15 pounds. He looks a lot leaner, moving a lot better out there on the field. And, you know, I think he can be a big-time player for Mississippi State down the line and is already making an impact as a freshman. But, you know, they're going to get – we'll have to see if they're going to get those three players back. Obviously, Jeffrey Simmons, the five-star recruit, you know, true freshman. He served his one-game suspension a week ago. Still don't know if he's going to play this week. I really think that he probably will. And then, obviously, Nick James, the senior nose guard, was suspended last week. He's probably going to be back. Dan Mullen still said that, you know, things are still up in the air. We'll find out about suspensions Saturday morning before kickoff is when they'll be announced. And then Malik Deer, a true sophomore slot receiver for State, really made some big plays for State last season as a true freshman. You know, they do a lot of different things with him. Sometimes they line him up in the backfield. They do some jet sweeps with him. You know, he just really plays that slot position well. He's so low to the ground. He's built a lot like Josh Robinson was for Mississippi State, except he plays receiver. So they do a lot of different things with him. They really missed him a week ago. He was suspended for a violation of team rules. Don't know yet
But Dan Mullen didn't arrest him, though, did he?
He did not. He did not. Okay. So, yeah, they so just really don't know what their status is for this week. We'll find out Saturday. They're kind of keeping things coy. But I would imagine you'll probably see all three of those guys come Saturday against the Gamecocks, to, you know, because they really need this game. This is a must-win game for Mississippi State. You can't start off 0-2 and then, you know, this obviously being the first conference game, be 0-1 in the league. You know, especially it's probably the easiest conference game that Mississippi State has this year. So they really need this game, you know, from a number standpoint and from a morale standpoint.
Well, Ole Miss is taking on Wofford now, and you know it's the FCS game, and I'm a proponent of these games because I think you know it gives the FCS kids an opportunity to play in the big stadiums and all that. It creates a better experience for them, but also. You know, you look at the rugged SEC schedule, you look at just one open date, and you look at all these injuries that teams, you know, that pile up for teams through the season. Look, sometimes that FCS game, obviously you have to respect the opponent, and Ole Miss certainly needs to do that this week on just 5 days rest. But look, let's face it, with a lot of these teams, you get a chance to play more players, you get guys more snaps, more experience, you can rest some starters who have injuries. You know, there are a lot of good things that come from the FCS game, and I'm always a proponent of playing this game in like November, you know, or late October when a lot of the grind of the season has already occurred. Last year, Ole Miss opened the season with an FCS opponent in Tennessee Martin, but it's Wofford this week. The Terriers, a small school in Spartanburg, South Carolina, about 1,600 students. They run the option, Logan, and that always presents a little bit of a challenge, and they do it somewhat differently. It's not just the quarterback running down the line of scrimmage and is he going to keep it or is he going to pitch it. You know, they'll run a lot of option plays out of the shotgun and, you know, just a lot of different variations of the triple option. And you go back and you look at how some teams who run the option fare in bowl games, not always very good. Ole Miss really, really controlled Georgia Tech in 2013 because they had a month to prepare for the option. Kind of the same thing for the Rebels against Oklahoma State following the 2009 season. You know, the Cowboys, not so much an option-heavy team, but that was part of what they were doing. And, you know, you have all that time to prepare, and it really helps you. Well, the flip side of that is, you know, the Rebels are trying to prepare for this Wofford option in just a few days. They actually spent a little bit of time on it in the summer, just kind of introducing it then, so you don't know what was retained from those workouts and meetings at that point. But anyway, that is Ole Miss facing Wofford this week. How will the Rebels handle the injuries to Kendarius Webster and Eric Swinney? Webster, look, I've heard some commentary after the Florida State game that had Webster hailed as a great player. I think that's misleading. I think he was set to have a big season, but he was a part of the pass defense last year that ranked number 13 in the SEC in yards allowed and was prone to give up big plays, and that was with two experienced safeties on the back end. The Rebels don't have that experience at safety right now, and while they were expecting a big season from Kendarius Webster, now he's gone. You know, they really were looking for big things from him. He had a great off season, added about 10 pounds to his frame, really committed himself to studying his game and trying to improve his technique. So big things were expected from Kendarius Webster this season. Now he's gone. And it's kind of wide open, Logan, as to who's going to fill his spot back there. The Rebels ended up playing six cornerbacks in the game last week, one of those being Webster. But you had seldom-used senior Kalo Moore back there. You had redshirt freshman Jalen Julius and true freshman Jalen Jones. You also had Carlos Davis, a former walk-on running back, who's been a couple of years at cornerback now. It's not like that's a recent change for him, but Davis is just 5'8", so you have a little bit of a height issue there. You go into this Wofford game, and Davis is listed as the starter. I think a lot of the attention is going to be placed on Jalen Jones, a four-star recruit out of Texas. I think it's going to be his opportunity. He seemed to get the most snaps in the Florida State game after Webster's injury. I wouldn't be surprised to see Derek Jones slide over there and play some cornerback as well. He played it earlier in his career, and he's kind of lost on the depth chart at wide receiver right now. Coming out of spring, he was listed second behind Demaryius Stringfellow, but he was not anywhere on the two deep going into the Florida State game. Seven different players caught a pass against Florida State, but Derek Jones was not one. He had not moved over to cornerback as of the viewable periods of the Wednesday practice, and maybe that doesn't happen until the Alabama week. Maybe they want to see what these young guys do against Wofford, but it would not be surprising in the days ahead to see Derek Jones move from wide receiver to cornerback, and he gives the Rebels a little more height at the position if he does that at about 6'1 or 6'2. Running back, I mentioned that Jordan Wilkins was already out, now Eric Swinney. And that means that true freshman Devon Penniman will not redshirt, probably will play a little bit against Wofford this week. The Rebels go into this game with Eugene Brasley, number two, on the depth chart. He played a little bit against the Seminoles, but carried just two times for 3 yards. He's a little bit lighter back, almost like a Jalen Walton type of back, although not quite as light as that, with Brasley coming in at 192 pounds. But Swinney was up around 210, and the guys that will get the opportunity to replace him, I believe, Penniman and perhaps third-year sophomore D.K. Buford, an Oxford native, played at Lafayette, signed as a defensive player, but he's been at running back for a couple of seasons. Both Buford and Penniman are significantly bigger than Brasley, so that may play into it. But what's going to play into it most, Logan, and you know this as well, is pass protection. That's so important for a running back, and if you just totally whiff in that area, then you've got to be something extra special when they hand you the ball, and I don't think that guy is on this Ole Miss roster somewhere, or he would already have been playing. So my guess is how quickly Penniman or Buford pick up pass protection will play a part in how much they get on the field. Brasley's going to get opportunities too. I think the Rebels have some ability at the position still, but they are much, much less deeper without Eric Swinney. And big things, so many big things were expected for him this year. Folks, that's it for this edition of Double Coverage with Parrish Alford. I am the Ole Miss beat writer for the Journal, and Logan Lowry, our Mississippi State writer. Want to remind you of other Daily Journal podcasts to search for as well. The Memo, all things Northeast Mississippi with Brad Locke and Derek Russell, 3 times a week on Monday, Wednesday, and Thursday. And Prep Rally, all things high school sports with Gene Phelps, Blake Morgan, and Brad Locke. That's coming to you every Wednesday. And start your day with Newsbreak. That's a new thing we're doing at djournal.com. All the news and sports of the day. A 5-minute video clip there with Brad Locke. Lots of good things going on there with Newsbreak. Check that out at djournal.com as well. We thank you for being a part of Double Coverage today. Come back here and join us next week.